Pride. Thank you so much. He absolutely worships Star Wars. I just can't believe it's you! If someone told me back when I first saw the first episode, if someone had said, "One day you're gonna meet Princess Leia face to face," I would have thought you were making fun of me, you know? Back then, I'm so sorry. A grown woman standing here crying like a baby. You must think I'm plum loco. No, that's okay. I've gotten to where it doesn't bother me as much what people think of me. I mean, it still hurts, but not so much, so I'm useless. And part of that, 'cause of you. Princess Leia was such a huge inspiration to me, I thought if I could grow up and be even just a little like you, 'cause a little of you looked like a big old lot to me. And then when I grew up, or got older, whichever, and I was on the express checkout line reading the magazine while I was waiting for the people with 20 items, when you're not supposed to have more than a dozen. So while I'm waiting, I'm flipping through this magazine, and I come across this picture of you. I might not have known it was you, except there was a picture of you in the slave outfit on the opposite page. So I start reading, and I swear I came to think that my finding that magazine with you in it was no accident. I don't know if you put much, you know, I doubt you believe in God or whatnot, because I always heard that celebrities are. You do? Oh, well, whatever you want to call him or it or. Look at me, here I am rattling off in the mouth when you have so many other people waiting. I'll just shut my trap and let you get to them. But before I do, could I ask you one last little favor? A picture? I mean, how many times does somebody find themselves standing with? I'm sorry, I get to talking. I'm just so thrilled and so nervous to meet you. Wait till I tell Ira down at the blood bank. He said I'd probably never. My camera? Well, it's in my purse. I think. I hope. Wouldn't that be, as my mom used to say, wouldn't that be it all? I wish she was still alive. She passed right when the first Star Wars came out. I remember at her wake, my cousins were talking about this crazy-sounding movie just opened that Wednesday. Amazing, isn't it? At first, it was just super hard for me. And if it hadn't been for Star Wars, I swear I don't know if I would have made it. It was like God took my mom home to him, and he led me to Star Wars. He gave me you and Luke and Han, and somehow that was enough. I don't mean enough, like having Star Wars was like having my mom back to life and stitching one of her crazy embroideries or that makes her sound like some kind of Betty Crocker type mom, and that's something she absolutely sure as shit, excuse my French, wasn't. She was a lot of things, my mom, my brother could tell you. He'd have been here, but he couldn't get off work. Me and him, we used to follow my mom without her knowing to make sure she was, well, that she'd keep out of trouble and such. I'm sorry, what? Oh, Ben. Ben, that's my brother's name. Ben. Like Ben Kenobi, only not, because, like I said, she died before she could have seen it. That's one regret I have. I don't like focusing on regretting things much, but I truly believe that if my mom could have seen you guys' movie, she. Well, it's no use crying over spilt people. How's your mom doing these days? I was sorry to hear about your dad. Did you and he ever. Picture. Oh, yes, please. Is there someone who could take it so we're both in it? Otherwise, people won't believe me when I. Oh, would you? Aren't you sweet? You just press here after you get it all framed right. Okay, now one sec. Is there any way you could put your arm around me? You can say no. I just had to. Aren't you sweet? I will never forget this day, even without the picture. Okay, are we framed in the center? You sure? Okay, now hold real still. Cheese! The word autograph comes to us originally from the Greek autos, self, and graphos, written, self-written. As it is popularly used, it refers to a famous person's signature. the hobby of collecting autographs, the practice of hoarding such mementos, which are often wrenched enthusiastically, if not savagely, from the hands of celebrities, is known as philography, or occasionally unpleasant. Some of the more sought-after signers are, in no particular order, presidents, military heroes, sports icons, actors, singers, artists, religious and social leaders, scientists, astronauts, authors, and Kardashians. So, a keepsake, coaxed or inveigled, from a celebrity by someone eagerly radiant, glowing with the recognition of a familiar face. A face as familiar as the closest of friends or family. And yet, weirdly, this familiarity is completely one-sided. I grew up watching my mother signing autographs, writing her name on smiling photographs of herself, or on pieces of blank paper hopefully held out to her by the outstretched arms of strangers who loved her, her fans. Now, the Oxford English Dictionary says the word fan derives quite apparently from the word fanatic. Well, not apparently. Anyway, which means marked by excessive enthusiasm and often intense, uncritical devotion. The entirety of what Debbie Reynolds knew of her fans is that they seriously appreciated her talents. They invested tiny pieces of their souls in her. When my father dumped her for Elizabeth Taylor, leaving her squirming sadly in the world spotlight with two bewildered toddlers, they shared her pain. That sort of familiarity bred quite the opposite of contempt, though something equally charged. In a way, she belonged to the world, and while most of the portion of it that appreciated her was content to do so at a distance, the true fans seemed to want to assert a kind of ownership by coyly requesting, or sometimes pitifully pleading, or aggressively demanding, that she provide them with their coveted token, proof to all and for all time in the pre-selfie era, of an encounter, an up-close brush with one of the cinematically anointed. I would stand loyally at my mother's side, watching as these memento-seeking well-wishers, MSW2s, gushed and giggled in her presence. From just outside her dazzle of limelight, I watched as she scribbled her lovely signature on the pictures, records, and magazines, many of their covers blaring news of the scandal she'd been subjected to, that were sometimes desperately held out to her. "And what's your name? Oh, what a lovely name, so unusual. Do you spell it with a Y or an IE? Oh, I had an Aunt Betty once. I loved her very much. Yes, but only if you take the picture very quickly. As you can see, I'm with my daughter." "Your daughter?" these devotees would exclaim, briefly wrenching their eyes toward me. "That's right! You have a daughter! Oh, my goodness! I didn't realize she'd gotten so big! And a beauty like her mama!" I'd frown and look away. This wasn't supposed to happen. I was there as an observer, not the observed, a witness to the world's mysteries. The archaeologist, not the pit. I'd blush and tuck my chin toward my chest as the focus abruptly shifted to me, caught off guard in the act. "Isn't she precious?" I can't remember exactly when I started referring to signing autographs for money as a celebrity lap dance, but I'm sure it didn't take me long to come up with it. It's lap dancing without cash being placed in any underwear, and there's no pole. Or is the pole represented by the pen? It's certainly a higher form of prostitution, the exchange of a signature for money as opposed to a dance or a grind. Instead of stripping off clothes, the celebrity removes the distance created by film or stage. Both traffic in intimacy. For many years, I, like so many other high-minded celebrities with flourishing careers, could afford to cavalierly wave away any and all arguably undignified appearance offers that, accompanied by a financial enticement, could only be experienced by those engaging in said ignoble acts as, for want of a better word, whoring. To be sure, it's selling out, which comes with feelings of embarrassment and shame. But if you're selling for high enough numbers, the duration of that humiliation has a more fleeting quality. And the distraction of purchasing the odd luxury item or, saints preserve us, paying bills, make the sense of shame similar to the embarrassment one feels about a weight gain of a fairly manageable variety. And then what is a loss of self-respect when placed in the context of diminishing worry about one's looming tax bill or monstrous overhead? So, over time, I have managed to rejigger my definition of dignity to the point where it comfortably includes lap dancing. It's just something that had to be gotten used to, like finding out your older sister is actually your mother, or winning the lottery but only being able to spend the money on Christmas Day. Hardly a hardship, it simply took some form of adaptation. With enough time, anything can be adjusted to, though things like torture would require readjustment of a kind I can scarcely imagine. But accustoming myself to scrawling my name for strangers was certainly within my capacities. Besides, over time, more and more celebrities have lent their overly familiar names and faces to products of all kinds, from cars to cosmetics to soda, and on into that netherworld just beyond yogurt. Nothing in the ever-evolving world of celebrity endorsement was impossible. So why should I be ashamed of spending days on end signing 8x10 photos of myself? Or even signing the flesh of another human who would subsequently get that signature tattooed onto their skin for all time? Why should that embarrass me more than Julia Roberts or Brad Pitt endorsing some high-end perfume that everyone knows they're not wearing, or Penelope Cruz appearing in a commercial swooning over cappuccino? Well, there are reasons. The biggest one being that getting $70 per signature doesn't really compare to the millions the likes of Mr. Pitt or Ms. Roberts receives for a photo shoot lasting a few hours. The difference might be compared to turning tricks in the East Village versus giving a hand job to an appreciative duke or duchess. When I was initially approached about going to Comic-Con, the giant comic book convention, I said, I wouldn't be caught dead at one of those has-been roundups. But as it turns out, I've been caught alive at those roundups often enough to wish I was dead. I don't like to make a practice of it, but just this once, okay, I'll sign it, Princess Leia. But you do know I'm not actually her, right? I might resemble this character that doesn't really exist off-screen and in human form. Well, maybe I don't resemble her quite as much as I used to, but for a while there, I looked almost exactly like her. Could you make it to Zalanda? That's two L's, an O before the N, and an A-H at the end. One of the L's is silent. Come on, get the fuck over yourself, I can hear you saying. You wanted to be in show business, deal with it. But I didn't. It's just that it turned out to be a lot harder to stay out of the famous fray than to enter it. Perpetual celebrity, the kind where any mention of you will interest a significant percentage of the public until the day you die, even if that day comes decades after your last real contribution to the culture, is exceedingly rare, reserved for the likes of Muhammad Ali. Most celebrities have the ordinary variety, in which lengthening periods of quiet alternate with brief flare-ups of activity that steadily diminish in intensity and frequency until the starlight fades away entirely, ultimately extinguished, at which point there's that final blaze of nostalgia that marks the passing of the now-lost icon. So I knew. I knew that what lies ahead for almost every public figure who arrives on the scene lay ahead for me as well. The attempted comeback, the memoir, the stints in rehab, although the option of lingering on in some reality show lineup didn't exist yet in the late 70s. I knew that this was just the nature of this unnatural business, that there, but for the bad fortune of someone else in stardom, would go me. I just hadn't come up with a viable alternative. So, when my place in the sun presented itself, I didn't have the nerve to turn it down. And this wasn't just a gift horse. It was a gift stampede. But, as inevitable as it is, you know some people think it will last forever. That beautiful actress over there, a bright young star from a newly successful franchise, beaming happily, or, wait, maybe not so happily. "I'm sorry, I don't have time to personalize," she tells the thrilled fan, holding out a picture of her in a bikini, lying on a beach under a tropical sun. The fan's brow furrows. "But I've been waiting for almost 2 hours," he pleads. "Couldn't you just..."
"No,"
she snaps, indicating the long line snaking behind him.
"They've been waiting just as long as you." She's fed up at all these eager devotees crowding her. "One of them stepped on my foot, see?"
The beautiful actress frowns, indicating a little red mark on her ankle.
"Ow,"
she adds for emphasis. "How much longer do I have to stay?" she asks her handler, her eyes stormy. The handler leans down to her nervously, his head covered in sweat. "We've cut the line at the east entrance. All you have to do is sign for those who got in before the cut. It shouldn't take you that long. Well, can I get you a water or a snack or something?" The beautiful actress rolls her eyes impatiently. "Christ," she mumbles under her fragrant breath. "Get me some fries, then, or an apple crepe." Her handler breathes a sigh of relief.
"You got it. No worries. I'll be back in a second."
Beautiful actress smirks, shakes her head moodily, and turns back to the nervously waiting fan. She blinks at him.
"Didn't I sign your thing already?" she barks, frightening him speechless. "Well, didn't I?"
Wry and resigned, her older counterparts watch from behind their photo-laden tables in this cavernous convention center, armed only with their pens and their stoic grins, on the dark side of their once bright shining stars, their focus-pulling days all but over, not to mention their days in general.
"There's Bill Shatner!"
Spending much less time signing than waiting to oblige the next long-lost fan in search of a nostalgic signature, signing photos taken when they were still certain it all lay ahead, their brilliant, multicolored futures populated with throngs of admirers who clung to their every motion, hung on their every word. The staring world barely blinked then. Now it dozes. Such is the fate that awaits all celebrities, poor dears. Waiting for an audience either no longer living or barely interested, making every effort to seem upbeat as they await the day when their fans will return to them, their current indifference having been merely a result of some temporary misunderstanding soon to be resolved. Until then, all they have to do is pretend it's not really happening.
"No, I'm sorry, I can't do it that weekend. I've got a lap dance in San Diego." Well, it was such an obvious metaphor to me, metaphor be with you, that it was easy to forget that it wasn't an accepted designation in the common vernacular. Sure, my friends and family got the reference, but all too often I'd forget that I wasn't sufficiently acquainted with someone who'd only very recently wandered into the eccentric entrance hall of my life, such as, for example, some place of business where, confronted with the price tag of an overpriced item, I'd say, shit, I can't afford that until after my lap dance next month. I'd continue along breezily for a sentence or two until I'd notice the look of astonishment on the high-end shop assistant's face. Sorry, I'd explain. I don't mean an actual lap dance, though it might as well be. It's this thing where I sign stuff for cash that is all but stuffed into my underwear and... Oh, never mind, it doesn't. Could you hold this for me for a few weeks? It's fair to conclude that my lap dancing was required penance for my fondness for shopping, either for gifts for my friends and mere acquaintances, or for yet another amusing antique hand or eye or foot, some gnome, some video art, some British phone booth for my witty and colorful home. I have the mixed blessing of being able to find the often obscurely hidden charm in many arguable objets d'art, not to mention animals and humans. If I didn't simply have to have things, and to make a donation to this cause or a loan, inadvertently but inevitably a gift, to that person, I might not have needed to clamor to this city or that country to do the odd speech or the odder still autograph show. I was decidedly on the wrong side of 40 when, as the new millennium dawned, I was first approached by Ben Stevens with official pics to see if I would consider doing a signing. My nose wrinkled involuntarily with distaste. Don't you have to be desperate to do something like sitting behind some table piled high with pics and pens and... Would there be merch, even? Ben smiled compassionately. There's no merchandising, he said emphatically, as if to assure me that this lack of obvious commerce would keep my dignity intact. Just signing pictures. And if you wanted to make a little extra moolah, you could take a few photos with the fans. No more than 50, unless you wanted to do more. Mainly, though, me and my staff would be there to make sure things go smoothly and quickly and... Of course, that you make as much money as possible. How did I get here? I didn't need money this badly, did I? Well, that all depends on your definition of need. Was I as rich as most of the media-saturated public assumed that I was, given that I was associated with one of the biggest money-making phenomena in the life of the nation? Not by a long, long, long shot. Holding out for points or a piece of the merchandising was not an option for, or even something that would ever have occurred to, a 19-year-old signing on for her first lead role in a little space movie. To be sure, though, I had a considerable amount of money in my early 20s. Wow! And then I didn't have to think about such things. I could pay someone to make sure my bills were paid and my money was locked up tight, and under no immediate threat of theft. Great. My attitude was, you take care of it. Just make sure I can shop and travel as much as possible. I'm no good with numbers, so you count while I cavort. Carefree. That went well. 2 decades and a pilfering business manager later, I was out of money. My house, or more accurately, the house the bank lets me live in for now, was mortgaged to the skies, and not, as it turned out, those friendly ones. I had become a poor rich person, cavorting in the style I had unfortunately become accustomed to now required real work. I took jobs writing travel pieces for magazines so I could circle the globe, my young daughter in tow. When Billy was 4 or 5, I made personal appearances at every Disneyland on the planet. All she knew was that we didn't have to stand in lines and got to go on the Matterhorn 3 times and have lunch with Dumbo. So while I might not yet have lost my convention virginity when Ben Stevens came a-calling, I was far from an innocent in the ways of selling myself, or at least my Leia self. Your once upon a time is up, Prince Charming's been abducted, Tinkerbell's on angel dust, the Matterhorn's erupted. Your once upon a time is up, Tammy's talking dirty, Dumbo has a PhD, Leia's age is 2 times 30. There we are in the huge, almost football field-sized convention center. Many of us side by side at long tables in front of longer swaths of blue fabric. Curtains of blue separating the celebrities from what? From round tables piled high with different sorts and sizes of photographs. We have gone on, aged, and in some cases, like my own, waists have thickened a bit, but the images have not changed. In the photos, we are stopped in our tracks, usually in a scene from a past film, caught for all time smiling or swooning, gazing or considering. And just beneath that momentary expression, that split second out of all the years of our lives, a signature will, for a nominal or near-nominal fee, be scrawled. That souvenir, now yours forever, captures two instants. The long-ago one, when the photo was taken, and the more recent one, when that signature was written just for you. You or some lucky friend or relative whose life you've generously chosen to enhance in this way. Two moments, decades apart, now joined forever. We sit in various stages of poised, awaiting our next appointment to exchange autograph for cash. Yes, actual paper money. The kind that they're promising to put a picture of a woman on one of these years. That cash entitles people to choose what color ink should be used. And the table is festooned with a rainbow of available pens. And which character's name they might also want inscribed below the actor's signature. Oh, and perhaps also a key line of dialogue spoken by said character. Finally, and for many, most importantly, the ability to carve out a uniquely personal exchange between the lap dancer and lap dancee, something so easily documented in the smartphone era. At the very least, a selfie, but even better, a video of your idol engaging you, in actual conversation. A digital keepsake that you will be able to carry with you and show off to those, one hopes, who will share your enthusiasm rather than react with an air of endurance until the end of time, or at least until such time as you lose the phone that you foolishly neglected to back up the contents of, and realize that you have lost not only your phone, but also proof of your contact with stardom. But there will be another Comic-Con, they're hardly rare now, where, if your luck with luminaries prevails, you will again find yourself in, or more accurately, maneuver yourself into, immediate proximity to your chosen celebrity's latest lap dance, which is when you can say, "Hey, Carrie! It's me, Jeffrey L. Tuna! We met at last year's FloridaCon! I was with that girl Corby with the Slave Leia tattoo on her shoulder? Yes, right! How have you been? We're down here visiting friends in Houston, and lucky me, this is the weekend for this. Anyway, Cheryl, that's my wife. Say, hey, honey. Anyway, hell, I lost my train or whatever I was saying. Well, really, only that it's great to see you again. And Gary! Hey, boy! Tongue still hanging down, I see. Gosh almighty, he is so cute. We have a Westie poodle mix. My oldest calls it a woodle, and we love him to bits, but he's just nowhere near as bright as your little man here. You get him a Twitter page like you said you wanted to? Instagram, better still, how awesome. Well, does he have many followers? 44K? That's more than most humans. Oh, well, I'll follow him right away. What's his name on it? Gary Fisher at Gary Fisher. That is brilliant. How do you think of it? I'm kidding. What do you think I am, some fan moron? No, I'm totally kidding again. We are just big fans. We love you for just being who you are. Maybe not regular, but not regular, you know? Hope I'm not talking too much. Guess I am, because of how Cheryl's looking at me. She's got my number. But could I ask you something? And I'm not talking about some super dark secret inside scoop or anything, because I know you're not allowed to say. But my neighbor Bob reads up on all this, and he reckoned that the black boy's skin is dark because of some hex that the dark side puts on him. Now, is that true? If yes, just nod your head. I know, I'm sorry. I just promised Bob I'd ask you if I saw you, and well, here we are. I couldn't let an opportunity like this just boom swish by, right? I mean, sure, no, yeah, I see that's quite a line. I'll let you go. I'm glad to see you again like this, and I gotta say, we are really looking forward to December 18th. Cannot wait. Okay, bye, Gary. Take good care of your mama now, you hear? Bye now. Now, I need you to know that I am not cynical about the fans. If you thought I was, you would probably not like me, which would defeat the purpose of this book and of so much else I do. I'm actually moved by them. There's something incredibly, incredibly sweet and mystifying about people waiting in lines for so long, and with very few exceptions, the people you meet while lap dancing are a fine and darling lot. The Star Wars films touch them in some incredibly profound or significant way. They remember everything about the day they first saw Star Wars 1, 2, and 3, which were officially, of course, 4, 5, and 6. Where they were, who they were with, what obstacles they had to overcome, cut school, skip practice in order to be there. And once they got there, how the experience surpassed any expectations they might have had, resulting in some life-changing experience. How, that day, things for them ceased to be in any way the same from then to forever after. So, of course, when they meet me, many of the forever altered long to tell me all these things and more, and at length. There's the girl with my signature tattooed to her ass, the couple that named their child Leia Carrie, the guy who had his name legally changed to Luke Skywalker. Imagine the policeman's face when he stops Luke Skywalker for speeding. What happened? Obi-Wan wouldn't let you use the X-Wing fighter tonight? They have marriage ceremonies where instead of the more traditional vows, one says, I love you, and the other says, I know. They come dressed in the outfits, and not only the women in the metal bikini, but some men are wearing it too. And it looks fantastic. For the most part, they're kind and courteous, and as if that weren't enough, they quite frequently appear before you in amazing homemade costumes whipped up by Alderaan-obsessed parents for their force-fed children. Tiny, tiny Ben Kenobis, little teeny Lukes, miniature Darth Vaders, and my personal favorites, the teensiest of Princess Leias. These smallest of small Leias are brought to me like tiny offerings, prized possessions held aloft for my blessings and my praise, both of which they receive in abundance. Do the children know that it's me they're dressed as? Of course not. Those under 4, all they know is that they're hot, that there are way too many people swarming around everywhere, and that they just want to go home. Or anywhere other than standing in this line with similarly swaddled sorts spilling out of their sci-fi garb with no imminent sign of escape. One little girl came by who'd been told she was going to meet Princess Leia. Imagine her excitement. That is, until she saw the new old me. No!
She wailed, squirming her head away from the sight of me. I want the other Leia, not the old one. Her father flushed, then leaned apologetically toward my ear.
Well, no, you see, she doesn't mean that. We've just seen the first three films and loved you in them so much.
Please, I interrupted. You don't have to apologize for my looking older to your daughter after 40 years. I look older to me, too, and I don't apologize to myself. Though perhaps I should. Vast airways of awkwardness ensued, his daughter unable to look at me and confront what time had done. It all ended well, though, with me promising to get plastic surgery, after I explained to the little girl what that was, and getting her father to promise to read his daughter Bits of Wishful Drinking and look at its pictures together so she'd see what the actual Carrie was like, and how pretty she could be once the endlessly extraordinary Leia was finished. The youngest fans, who do know where they are, and where they're likely to be for quite some time, rarely seem happy, and when they finally reach their inexplicable destination, they become paralyzed with shyness and hide behind whatever part of their parents they can access through their stormtrooper get-ups. The most desperate, confused, or hungry ones cry in fear or embarrassment or exasperation or all three, while I do my best to soothe them. I bust my ass trying to soothe them, for their pain is palpable and I have rampant empathy. And while the adults are unfailingly polite, there's a certain lack of empathy among some of them for me. They know they might be bothering me with their requests, a selfie, a lengthy inscription, an extra few for my friends. They love Star Wars as much as I do, one of them even more. And they're quick to acknowledge this and pretend that they could accept rejection. But screw it. They know they're not asking me to do anything that hard. They present their request with the pretense that I have the option to refuse. But we're all aware that the exchange could move very quickly to, well, you wanted to be in show business, and if you didn't want people to want your autograph, you should never have become an actress. They also frequently want you to write a piece of dialogue, and that is how I first came to understand who they thought Leia was. I knew who she was to the women, but the men really liked her unthreatening little bitchiness, which was probably even less intimidating because I'm short. All the lines they want me to write are like, aren't you a little short for a stormtrooper? The biggest favorite is, why, you stuck-up, half-witted, scruffy-looking nerf herder. They can't get enough of it. I sit there in front of all of these different pictures of myself from a million years ago and attempt to make looking at images from other eras somehow interesting to me. I don't remember when these photos were taken or who the photographers were. One picture in particular makes me feel happy and sad. It's a very popular one, and in it, I look high as a kite. I occasionally like to ask people, how do I look in that shot? The kinder people respond sleepy or tired or almost available. I was signing my nude ass picture a decade or so ago, and I realized that I'd been, and I can't believe I'm using this word about myself, a sex symbol. Only now, the reaction I sometimes get is disappointment, occasionally bordering on resentment for my having desecrated my body by letting my age increase so. It's like I've teepeed myself, thrown eggs at myself, defaced myself as if I were a rowdy trick-or-treater, and some of them are appalled. I wish I'd understood the kind of contract I signed by wearing something like that. You know, insinuating I would and will always remain somewhere in the erotic ballpark appearance-wise, enabling fans to remain connected to their younger, yearning selves, longing to be with me without having to realize that we're both long past all of this in any urgent sense,
and accepting it as a memory rather than an ongoing reality. It is truly an honor to have been the first crush of so many boys. It's just difficult to get my head around having spent so much time in so many heads, and that time was of a certain quality. It occurred to me one day as I finished affixing my flowery signature to yet another photograph of my long-ago young self wearing that slave bikini, that it could appear as though someone had convinced me that if I signed enough of these provocative images, I would, at some point, magically return to being young and slim. You were my first crush. I heard it so much I started asking who their second one was. We know what a first crush is to a teenager, but what does it mean to a 5-year-old? But I thought you were mine, that I had found you. I was the only one who knew how beautiful you were, because you weren't beautiful in that usual way women in film are, right? He realizes that I might take what he's saying wrong. He doesn't mean it that way. I reassure him, touch his arm. Why not give him an anecdote? I know what you mean. It's fine. Go on. He checks my face to see if I mean it. I do. He continues. So my friend, when I tell him about my crush, he goes, "Oh, yeah, she's awesome. I have a total crush on her, too. Everyone does." I got upset. I could have punched him. Why? Because you were mine, and I wanted to be the one who loved you. Me. Maybe even help you. He got embarrassed. Anyway, I wanted to tell you. He shrugs, then adds, "Thanks for my childhood," and walks off. Wow, what a thing to be given credit for, to be thanked for. Because he didn't mean his whole childhood. He meant the good bits, the parts he escaped to. I'm grateful for those good bits he shared with me. And this honor is one that should be and is shared massively and gratefully with George Lucas and Pat McDermott. We showed it to our daughter when she was 5, and we've been trying to figure out when to show it to our son, who's 4.5. What do you think? It's like they're introducing the child to a tribe. There's a ritual. You hold your child above your head, bring him toward some Wizard of Oz-like setup, place him down as an offering and say, "Watch this." Then you watch him watching Star Wars, trying to figure out just how much you have in common with your kid. See which character he'll identify with, who he'll root for, and hope that at the end of it, you can still love your child in the same way. I showed it to Billy when she was 5, and her first reaction was that it was too loud. Also, her second and third. If you can find a common language that runs from 5 to 85, you've got yourself something, and Star Wars fans have something. In a way, it's as if they know they have this great gift to bestow, and they want to bestow it as perfectly as possible. The perfect time, the perfect place, the perfect situation for passing on this life-defining experience. And the kids will always remember for their entire lives how they first felt when they first saw their now favorite movie. And they were given this gift by their parents and can now share it together. Truly a family affair. My mother showed it to me when I was 6, one mother says, and it kick-started my life. The women forgive me for being in the metal bikini because they know I'm not in it voluntarily, and they let the men like it, even have their fairly innocuous little erections. Because they know that I represent something else, and not just the sex thing. Capable, reliable, equal to, if not better than a man, okay? I'm sure I didn't pay enough attention to what things were like, BL, before Leia. But the movie came out at the same time that a popular slogan of the day was, "A woman without a man is like a fish without a bicycle." And many females of all ages seem to have been glad I'd arrived on the scene, a heroine for our time. I was something women and men could agree on. They didn't like me in the same way, but they liked me with the same intensity and were all fine with the other sex liking me too. Isn't that weird? Think about it. And then stop and ponder something actually important. Sorry, but could you use a silver pen? Great, thanks. And wait, ooh, not there. Maybe in the space next to your head? That would be great. And could you write the character's name just under yours? PLO? What does that mean? Palestine something? Oh, of course. Princess Leia Organa. Very funny. But could you maybe also just write Leia, like in parentheses or something? Thanks. This is so great! Now I have pretty much everyone, once I get Harrison, I mean. Yeah, right, it sure is a long shot, but no harm in hoping, is there? I didn't think I'd get Mark in the beginning, because at first he wasn't doing them, and then all of a sudden they said he was going to that celebration in San Diego. At first I didn't believe. Well, I thought I'd fall over. Not fall, but I was lightheaded, you know, woozy-like. I guess you've probably noticed by now that I'm really kind of a fanatic. Yet even as I say it, I really don't feel like crazy. Star Wars gives me a feeling of ongoingness, you know? Like, it's been here, and it's still here, and it'll stay here. Especially now with the new movie coming out. I mean, when they first said there was going to be a new movie, I just... wow, you know? Dreams really can come true. That's why I believe I'm going to get Harrison's autograph. Sure, the odds are kind of against it, but who thought there'd really be an episode 7 and that you guys were going to be in it? That would have seemed crazy to a lot of people. Not me, though, because I believe in it. Not like religion believed. That would be schizo, sort of. But also not like religion. It's got good and evil like a religion, and miracles and priests and devils. The thing about Star Wars for me is the characters. They feel so real to me. Like you could know them if you met them. Like I'm talking to you. I always knew I'd talk to you one day. I don't know how I knew. I just did. When I first saw you in A New Hope... and when did they start calling it that anyway? When did it stop just being Star Wars? It was like I'd seen you before. No, not in shampoo. I was too young for that, but you were so familiar. Not in a creepy way familiar, but familiar like family familiar. Hey, those words are practically the same, right? See, it's stuff like that. Stuff you didn't know you knew till it was like you'd never not known it. And that's how I feel about Star Wars. About all you guys in Star Wars. You were my family. Sure, your branch of the tree was more special than my actual family, but because of you being amazing, maybe I could be amazing one day. And even if I wasn't, I was still related to awesome. To you. I saw myself in you, and that's why I can stand here and talk to you. Why I got over being nervous so fast, because... well, I just said why. Because of the Force, because it moves through you and around you and into the person standing across from you. It's like this thing my mom used to say, "I salute the light of the God within you." That's the Force for me. I salute the light of the Force within and without you. The light that shines away from the dark side. Whatever it is that the Force wills, I will. I will its will. Its will, not mine, be done. Give me the knowledge of the all-knowing Force. Give me the power to carry out the will of the Force. I thank the Force for empowering me with the light that shines its forceful rays on me, through me, and to infinity. May the Force be with us all. Sorry, I know I must sound wacky. To some people I sound wacky, to others I don't. But I can see that light in you, the light of the Force that unites us and binds us to see that we get to the next place, the one that waits for us. And that waiting is what many of us call safety. I feel the Force take my will and move it slowly and ever more its way. Move me ever so radiantly into the next thing or things. And one of those things is episode 7. I am a part of it just as it is a part of me. I've waited for it for a very long time. Those prequels weren't Star Wars, Jar Jar Binks, God. But 7 is the epitome of Star Wars. I do its bidding and trust its direction. I pulse with each beat of the Force. Its strength is mine. I'm sorry. I don't mean to go on like that. It happens when I get excited and... I don't? Well, I am. I mean, initially I was, but then I must have gotten comfortable. For whatever reason, I feel comfortable around you. The weird thing is that a bunch of my friends say, I look like you. No, I know you're not blonde, but we have the same eye color. Yeah, hazel. No? I thought they were. That's funny. Maybe I'm getting you mixed up with your mom. I read hers were green, but they look hazel in a bunch of her pictures. Did you know that only men can be colorblind? I didn't either. See, it's stuff like that. Almost everyone I know knew that, but I didn't, and now you didn't, too. You get a bunch of little things like that, and it adds up. Which might be why I remind my friends of you. When you were fat, I was fat, too. And then we had to lose weight. Huh? No, Disney didn't send me a trainer. I guess they were just worried about you. They didn't need everyone who looked like you to lose weight, too. Did you also get that pre-diabetes thing? No? Well, maybe you still will. Not that I hope that. I was just seeing how else we could be similar. The biggest thing for me was that it was because of you I tried to become a lawyer. No, in the end I didn't, but at the time I thought, hey, if Princess Leia can do everything she does, why can't I go to law school? I had to do something that was the equivalent of when you yelled at Luke and Han, put that thing away or you're going to get us all killed. Oh, sorry. I didn't think it was going to be that loud. I was just trying to do it like you. Yeah, I did, didn't I? I mean, was. I was as loud as you. Did it feel good when you did it? Okay, then. There's another thing. We both dieted, neither one of us is colorblind, and we feel good yelling. See, enough things eventually add up and... Right, no girls are colorblind, but that doesn't matter because so are we. Just like both of us having dogs named Gary. I didn't? I thought I told you that right away. Oh, well then this is me telling you now. I have a dog named Gary too. When? I don't know exactly, but around the same time as you got your Gary. Maybe a little after, but I hadn't known about your Gary when I got mine, or at least not consciously. You didn't Twitter it, did you? I thought not. All's I know is I had this crazy impulse one day to get a dog, right? I'd been super sick with really bad bronchitis. I had this really high fever, which made me get those super vivid dreams. And in one dream, I was with you. And we both had this French bulldog named Gary. The weird thing was, I didn't think I'd ever heard of that type of dog. Anyway, I dreamt we had this black bulldog, and the next thing I know, my dad gets me this dog. Trippy, right? A lot of people thought I'd copied you, like always, but how could I have copied you when it was my dad that bought him for me based on a dream I can barely even still remember having? So that's just one more thing. You have to admit, there's something kind of spooky, no? We look alike. We have the same dog, almost the same hair color, and weight issues. It adds up after a while, you have to admit. Some people might say it's coincidence, but even if it is, it's a trippy coincidence. Hey, maybe we can mate our Garys. No, my Gary's a girl, so it could work. Wouldn't that be awesome? I mean, that would be the perfect outcome to this whole snarl of amazingness. He is? Well, those things can be reversed, can't they? No? A dog can't be unfixed? But if you really believe he can, then he can. We could use the force to unfix him, then have puppies we sell on Twitter. Or not sell, but announce the miracle. The second coming of the mating of Gary. Gary he and Gary she. Gary we. We as in we, which in French, as in French bulldog, means yes. So yes, bring on the bulldog babies. I saw where someone was complaining about how much celebrities charge for autographs at these events, and in our defense, someone said, well, you know, it may cost that much now, but when she dies, it's really going to be worth a lot. So my death is worth something to some people. If I had enough pictures signed, someone could put out a hit on me. Of course, I still also sign autographs for free. At screenings, for example, where the professional autograph hounds follow you around, braying and nipping at your heels, waving photos under your face until someone whose signature is more valuable or more current shows up, at which point they abandon you until that brighter star escapes into a car or through a door, and then they come scampering back to you. Miss Fisher, please, I've flown all the way from Newfoundland. Miss Fisher, please, I've been in love with you since I was a little boy. This man is in his 60s. Miss Fisher, I was almost in 9/11. Well, then you think, of course, this person could have been killed. Where do I sign? But then, wait. You think a second. What does that really mean? She was in the World Trade Center but somehow managed to escape? She was on the downtown subway stuck in Midtown when the first plane hit? She'd interviewed for a job with Cantor Fitzgerald but didn't get it? She had a job there but slept through the sound of her alarm and so wasn't there at her desk when... And on and on and on. But can you ask her any of this? More to the point, do you want to? Do you want to be the person questioning the validity of someone's tale of their brush with tragedy just because you'd rather not sign their poster? But if it is a lie, if this woman has concocted this story to ensure that you'll not only sign her poster, but that you'll sign four... Hell, why not five? And for that matter, how about a grand total of 11? So if it's not true, and she's invented a story about narrowly escaping being somewhere horrific when she was really just home like the rest of us saps glued to the TV, then she just won the award for the fan most willing to lie about her involvement in one of the more sacred tragedies ever to scar this earth, and to risk hell for the sake of some sci-fi signature. No, it couldn't be. Best not to think of it. Sensation adjacent. I went to Madame Tussaud's to see the wax statue they'd made of me. Well, not me, actually. That would have been someone lying in bed watching old movies on TV, drinking a Coke with one hand while adjusting her dog Gary's tongue with the other. The statue they made was of Princess Leia me. Not that I'm a big fan of my face, but still, it is mine, whichever way you tilt it. I didn't like my face when I should have, and now that it's melted... I look back on that face fondly, People send me pictures of my young pre-melted face all the time. Angry pre-melted. Well, a lot of angry pre-melted, actually. Agitated, frustrated, my face tense with, well, mostly frustration.